The Bible says, "Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man." Ted Turner and Playboy magazine and various TV moguls and entrepreneurs say Christianity is a religion for losers. I don't want anybody to die for me. I've had a few drinks. I've had a few girlfriends. And if that's going to put me in hell, then so be it. Actual quote from Ted Turner. He is really the consummate humanist. He really has no faith whatsoever in God. If he did, of course, he'd believe in Jesus. And furthermore, he does not believe there's a hell. If he did, he would not think that a few drinks and a few girlfriends would be worth spending an eternity there in hell. But what we have here are two world views. One speaks of duty. The other speaks of license. One says that man is amenable to God and therefore obligated to keep His commandments. The other says man is completely autonomous and free to do exactly as he wishes. One is predicated on the truth that there is more to living than man's physical existence. As we note in Hebrews 9:27, it's appointed unto man once to die, and after this the judgment. On the other, the other is based on the basis that man's physical existence is all there is. Well, we know that isn't the case. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15:32, "If the dead do not rise, then let us eat, drink, for tomorrow we die." One point of view represents a theistic, biblical, or theistic or biblical worldview. The other exemplifies an atheistic or humanistic worldview. Now, the question is, which worldview is right? Is there really a God, a supreme being, a creator? Is man just physical, or does man have a spiritual dimension? Is there life beyond the grave? Are heaven and hell factual, or are they simply the figments of a deluded mind? Does life have meaning and purpose, or is man a chance collection of atoms with no reason for being? How you answer these questions determines what you think about the point of man's existence and the meaning of life. The biblical worldview pictures time, that is history, as the arena in which God and His judgments meet the obedience or rebellion of man. Consequently, history or time is important or meaningful. Traditionally, in Western culture, with its biblical underpinnings, events in history have always been highly valued. It is only recently, as a Western civilization continues to move further away from the truths taught in the Bible, that the value of time has been perverted. Modern evolutionary thought, that is, the general theory of evolution, is to blame for such perversion. To the evolutionist, time, like matter, is eternal. Consequently, the atheistic or humanist mindset does not see time in the arena in which God and His judgments meet the obedience or rebellion of mankind. Instead, time becomes the vehicle of salvation. In other words, evolutionists like humanists, Marxists, and other similar ilk view history as the whole show. That's it. But such relativistic views of time always define history as a closed system. The Dutch philosopher Herman Dewey Weird, and that's not making up a name, he's weird, Dewey Weird, expressed it like this: history has no windows looking out into eternity. Man is completely enclosed in it and cannot elevate himself to a superhistorical level of contemplation. History is the be-all and end-all of man's existence and of his faculty of experience. And it is ruled by destiny, the inescapable fate. As we have noted previously, a biblical worldview knows that history is important, but it is not a god to be bowed down to and worshipped. Unfortunately, history has become an idol in the mind of humanists. Values, according to this way of thinking, are nothing more than historical facts. And that historical facts are just the course of development in human reason. Whatever the human sentiments are at any given time become the laws which govern that situation, rejecting, as they do, the law above the law concept. The humanists have bowed themselves in worshipful obedience to history. History, as the only true absolute, has been enthroned as the Lord of the universe. Accordingly, Oswald Spengler, in his monumental interpretation of Western civilization, which, by the way, is called The Decline of the West, closed his two-volume book of doom and gloom with this sentiment: we have not the freedom to reach to this or to that, but the freedom to do the necessary or to do nothing. And a task that historic necessity has set will be accomplished with the individual or against him, simply based on history. In this philosophy, the worldview is that currently causing our Constitution to be interpreted by jurists who believe law is nothing more than the sentiments of the moment. Think about it. Back in June 1972, 181 years after the adoption of the Bill of Rights, in Furman versus Georgia, the U.S. Supreme Court discovered that capital punishment was unconstitutional. According to the court, capital punishment was a violation of the cruel and unusual punishment prohibition of the Eighth Amendment. Fortunately, the Supreme Court has since reversed itself, and such an interpretation is clearly in error, and it can be seen when one considers the Sixth Amendment, which is adopted at the same time as the Eighth, mentioning capital or otherwise infamous crime. Now, furthermore, such jurists have determined that it is a right for a woman to have abortion. And somehow they find this in the Constitution. Both liberal and conservative constitutional scholars agree that such a right is nothing more than the sentiments of judges who, quote, discovered it. The truth is, abortion is no more a constitutional right than was the unthinkable thought among the founding fathers that a mother should be allowed to abort an unborn child. In reality, the Constitution hasn't changed, only the sentiments of those who interpret it. Now, on the same vein, homosexuality, traditionally thought to be a perversity in Western society, is now touted as a viable alternative lifestyle, end quote. The growing sentiment in favor of homosexuality is already being translated into various laws, Now, homosexuality is perfectly legal and a right to be protected by, you know it, the Constitution. The Constitution. Time has evolved, and public sentiment towards acceptance of homosexuality has become a part of history. The Lord of the universe now demands that the law reflect the sentiment towards homosexuality as favorable. Brethren, these things ought not so to be. But each day, our society enforces some new sentiment. The family is the very backbone of our society. And as such, the traditional family, we are still being told by social engineers, is a relic of the past and must be eliminated in favor of something more modern. Did you get that? It must be eliminated in favor of something more modern. In a book called The Feminization of America, which is subtitled How Women's Values Are Changing Our Public and Private Lives, the authors made their ideas on this subject quite clear, writing about the blended or mine, yours, and ours families of modern America. They said, and I quote, "Although it will be some years before research on these new family constellations can yield a definitive information, some child psychologists and family therapists are making educated guesses that the children growing up in these families, because of their experience with diffuse affectional lines, will have an easier time with personal relationships in their adult lives than the children of nuclear families," end quote. They then go on to say, quote, "The family today is an unstable, transitional phase as it struggles in a time of flux to break out of ancient tribal system of clannish being kinship ties and arrangements bundled are based on physical and psychological dependency and a narrowing down of the social group. The restricted family." And an anthropologist by the name of Levi Strauss, terms it this way. The rigid and arbitrary forms of the past are rejected in favor of more open, balanced, and creative styles of living together. The family's redefinition and reshaping reflect our changing lives and our everlasting need for nourishing, supportive relationships," end quote. These trends are, to say the least, disturbing. And you may be asking yourselves, well, can we really do anything about them? When we start asking the question, our enemy is very close to winning the battle, and we can see it all around us. He's about to win because he has cunningly seduced us. When we mention traditional values or speak of the way it used to be, we frequently hear people saying, well, you can't turn back the clock, or you're just going to have to learn to adapt to the times. People who think this way view history as a closed system, as we said before, that's moving in an inevitable direction. To them, the values of the past represent archaic or outdated thinking, and current trends are identified as modern or inevitable thinking. To these who bow at the totem of history, historical trends must not be challenged. This que sera, sera, or what will be syndrome, uses time as a very seductive metaphor. And if we are not careful, those of us who would Never think of bowing to history as the Lord of the universe can be trapped into believing that a shrewdly devised deception is the truth. Remember, the devil is quite cunning. In 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 11, there it is. 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 11, lest Satan should take advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. And remember what Paul said over in Ephesians 6 and verse 11? Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Whenever we speak of the destruction of traditional values and declining morality, instead of allowing the enemy to trick us into using a time metaphor, we should insist on the use of a space metaphor. Let me explain. If one were attempting to follow a road to a desired destination, and he came to a detour in the road, taking this detour would upon taking this detour, he found himself to be up to his neck in muck and mire. Now, just get the picture. He was following the road to a destination, came to a detour, and he found himself up to his neck in muck and mire. But because he believed one can't turn back the clock, he continued on until he disappeared under the slime. Now, what do we think about a man like that? Not a very wise man. Not a very wise man. Now, what is the point? Well, the point is America has taken a detour and become bogged down in the muck and the mire of hedonism and materialism and humanism. America does not need to be trying to return to something in the past that never really existed anyway. What America needs to be doing is getting on the right road again. We must understand that the spiritual and religious aspects of the current problems are real. Americans must once again learn to think of time or history in the arena which God places it, and where God's judgments are valid and obedience must be had on the part of man, not rebellion. Notice with me, if you will, please, Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verses 13 and 14. Let us hear the whole conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. We've got to get into that scope and not be thinking about this ever-changing worldview that is accepted by man today. The Bible believer's responsibility is to outthink, outlive, and outdie the pagans. That's it. Outthink, outlive, and outdie. And consequently, Christians are obligated to demolish every argument and every pretentious thought process that arrays itself against the knowledge of God, taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Christians have a responsibility to overcome Satan, not just to give in. And I'm afraid that we've been just giving in for too many years. If our thinking is sloppy and shallow, our actions of life will display that same character. If our minds are fragmented and disjointed, our life will probably be just the same. If our thinking is full of errors, then many of our actions are going to be wrong. In the book of Proverbs, I'm sorry, I skipped over that one. Let me get back to it. There it is, Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 7. Notice the wise man said, For as he thinks in his heart, so is he. If you allow yourself to fall into this type of thinking, that's what you'll be. That is what you'll be. Man, like time, is not in any respect to be the same as God. Man did not create himself, nor did he write his own laws. Man, nevertheless, men and women do make themselves. That is, they determine where their lives will go, what they will do in their lives. And we are to take seriously this job of doing this in hand by beginning to discover who we are and what we may become, and realize that there is real meaning to life. Man is not, as the materialistic people tell us, simply the product of random chance. There is more to life than the gratification of the flesh. Man is a spiritual being, a creator of an almighty God. How we exercise our free will in regard to God's grace in this time or space continuum determines where we will spend eternity. Honoring God and keeping His commandments, this is the point of it all. This is the meaning of life. Consequently, in Colossians 2 and verse 8, Paul says, "Beware lest anyone cheat you through philosophy and empty deceit, according to the traditions of men, according to the basic principles of the world." Now, I want to stop for just a moment there, and I want you to reflect on what we've been talking about. Paul said, don't let anyone cheat you. How? Through philosophy, deceit, according to the traditions of men and the basic principles of the world. Don't you let them do it. Because what that is not according to Christ. Not according to Christ.